Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in this amazing planet of ours. I am Malcolm Hawker, and I'm the host of the CDO Matters podcast. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca O'Kill. She is the Chief Data and Analytics Officer of Axis Capital. Rebecca, happy Friday. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Happy Friday to you too.
Brilliant. Well, today we are going to talk about navigating a data and analytics function to this amazing future state. Maybe it's AI, maybe it's adaptive, maybe it is, who knows what the future looks like. But what we're going to talk today about today is how do we adapt our operating models to where we need to be? Things are changing in our world. We just did the Prophecy Data Summit yesterday. We were talking about all the changes. We're talking about the noise. How do you navigate that noise? We're going to continue those conversations today on the CDO Matters podcast. We're going to talk things about like governance, talk about the team. We're also going to take some time to celebrate successes. I don't think we do that nearly enough in our world. So if these things interest you, if you are a data and analytics leader wondering about how to adapt your operating model for this brave new world, stick with us. It's going to be a great conversation. So let's start with the fun stuff first. Let's start with some successes. Rebecca, what can you share that you're particularly proud of that you've done over the last year that you'd love to share with some of the listeners and viewers?
I mean, it's a great question. And I think it's, like you say, I think it's really important to take the time to reflect on the things that have gone well, because I think quite often in this role, in data roles in general, you can end up feeling disheartened a lot of the time about things that haven't gone well. So for me, a lot of the successes that have really come up in the last year have been around kind of building relationships and changing people's perspectives about data. And I think we've gone through a bit of a process whereby we've had skeptics and we've managed to bring those people to become allies. And for me, those have been some of the more successful things that I think it's great to look back on and reflect and feel very, very proud of, because I think that those are the sorts of successes that then have knock-on effect and enable us to then have more successes in the future and to gather more momentum and generally to be much more successful as a DNA organization.
Okay, so that necessarily begs the question of how were you able to turn the skeptics into believers? Is it just charm? Is it more than that? What do you think were the secrets to success in getting people on board?
Again, great question. And I like to think charm is part of it, but definitely doesn't solve the full problem. Really, our focus has been, and our focus continues to be as a kind of data and analytics team, is on delivering value. And it's about understanding what the business needs and what our business stakeholders needs, and then working with them to deliver it. So I would say the places where we've had a lot of traction and where we've made real progress in that area is where we've spent time, first of all, I guess, listening, spending time with our business stakeholders, understanding what it is that they want to use data for, where they can get more value from data, where they have kind of analytical or AI questions that could be used to solve some of their problems, and then partnering with them to then work out, okay, what does that mean we as a team need to be focused on, and how do we build all of the things that are required to get them the thing that they need? And so in places where we've really kind of managed to win people over, it's where we've listened, we've understood, and then we have created either the beginnings of a solution or a small initial solution, and then they've started to see the light and think, oh, hang on a second, there is value here, these people understand me, and if I work with them, then we can get to a good place.
Okay, so who are the people doing the listening? I'm really interested in this, because a lot of us are investing in this idea of data products, right? With mm-hmm. the whole idea that the product is kind of the output of that listening process. But I'm interested in understanding who is doing the listening. Do you have analysts? Do you have product managers? Have you assigned people like data product owners? Who are the folks that are directly interfacing with people on the business side, gathering requirements, understanding business processes. What does that role look like in your organization?
So this is something that I would say has been evolving and is still very much evolving. So in terms of who's done listening today, I spend a lot of time out there with the business listening and translating to my team. And I think that's an important part of my role to kind of build those relationships and spend time with the business leaders. And alongside that, in terms of the people that are on the ground, actually understanding the more specific requirements, I've got Google Data Insights lead at the moment who are kind of hybrid people, I guess, in that they understand data, but they also have some kind of business experience, so they can kind of do that translation piece. And yeah, we've got a few of those. I wish I had more, because I think they are quite difficult people to find. But a lot of those people, actually, a number of the people that I have that are very successful in those roles are people that I've nicked from the business. So people that have been within business functions and have an interest in data, and therefore have ended up moving into my team.
Brilliant. I love it. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, developing people from the business side. I mean, that's something when I was an analyst, I talked about all the time as a best practice, because ultimately those folks should be domain experts. That's the word we're using a lot these days is, you know, these should be domain experts. What about prioritization? What are you focusing on, and how do you make decisions related to that?
Prioritization, again, I think is one of the biggest challenges of all, because everybody wants stuff. Everybody wants stuff now, and everybody's desires are the most important things as far as they're concerned. And I think we've come from a place where it was all about whoever's, you know, who knows who or who shouts the loudest. And I would say that we're still very much on the journey and trying to work out how we can do a lot better at prioritizing. But for me, there are a number of things that have to be factored in when you're thinking about how to prioritize. The first thing is really understanding the business value and being able to kind of estimate what it's going to deliver in terms of value for the organization, which can be difficult because a lot of the time, you know, we don't have necessarily the right frameworks in place to be able to say, right, well, it's going to enable $10 million of value or top line, bottom line, or whatever. But we have to get a bit better at that, and we have to start sizing things from a value perspective. And we're on a bit of a journey there, and I think we've got a lot better than we were. The other thing is, so we're, I guess, to step back for a moment and give a little bit of background about the journey that we're on. So, yeah, Access Capital Insurance organization, we sell lots of different products in lots of different geographies. And historically, the way that the organization has kind of come together has been almost like lots of little separate businesses. And so our data estate reflects that. We've got lots and lots of different repositories of data, and things are defined in very, very different ways. So what I've been asked to do, I guess, over the next few years is really to try and consolidate that and to create a wonderful data platform that serves all of our needs and enables us to do all the wonderful things we can't do today. So prioritization is incredibly important, because that is a huge task, and it's not something you can just say, right, okay, let's take all that data, put it over here, and our problems are solved. And so sequencing is actually really important, because what I want to do is align kind of the things that the business needs with kind of then doing all of the foundational stuff alongside it. So we understand the needs of the business, we build out solutions for the business, and alongside that, we're bringing all the data into our new platform, we're applying governance, we're doing the definitions, we're doing all of the good stuff that you need to do to have a really fantastic data estate that's ready for AI and all the other stuff. So yeah, there is definitely also, as well as kind of understanding the value of the business requirements, there's also a logical sequence to doing that, so that you build it up in a way that gets you to the right place. So particularly when you think about insurance, you know, premium policy data around policies is one building block. Data around claims is another building block, but you can't have data around claims until you've got the data around policies, because claims attach to policies. And so there's a logical order there as well. So we try and take into account the value as well as the impact it has on our wider data strategy.
So from a priority perspective, those same folks, I assume, that are doing the listening, right, that are understanding policies, that are understanding, you know, claims processes, you know, building and writing new policies, they're trying to understand all of that stuff. They're also trying to understand the value equation, it seems like to me, and putting all that together. Do you have like a separate PMO type organization internally, or is it you that are managing the roadmaps?
Yeah, and again, that's the thing that we've been evolving over the course of the last year and a half. We do have a PMO organization, but really we're shifting to do much more agile delivery. And so therefore we're doing that ourselves, which essentially means that those people that are doing the designing piece then have, they're kind of almost leading delivery squads. And we have all the right kind of skill sets working within that squad so that we can do the building or the architecting, which is very, very important. The building, the governance activities as well, kind of liaising with the business to explain to them what their roles are, gathering definitions, and then kind of creating the solutions that's on top of all of that.
Got it. Excuse me. Still my first cup of coffee here on the East Coast in the US. So clearing my throat here. My apologies. So when it comes to data science, do you have a separate data science team? If yes, is that under you? Is that under another group? What does that look like at Axis?
So yes, we do. I have, actually in the last month, I had a new head of data science and AI delivery is the job title. And so I have within that team a number of data scientists and AI engineers, and they are building out data science and AI solutions support for business needs.
Okay, and that's still entirely under your remit.
That's right.
So when the business is asking for cool, new, fun AI stuff, that is squarely looking at you.
It is squarely looking at me, which has become quite a challenge because everybody wants cool new AI stuff without necessarily the understanding of exactly what it is that they really want and exactly what it is that it will deliver. So we have recently kind of evolved our governance around AI. We're implementing what we're calling AI champions. So every area of the business has somebody within their business area who we're training up and will be like the conduit for all AI stuff. It's their mandate to upskill their organization around what AI is, what's available to them, what we already have internally, how we're thinking about AI strategically. But they're also then that kind of like initial filtration point when it comes to ideas and things that they might want building. So rather than us from getting all of the millions of thoughts that people have had around potential AI solutions that might solve a problem, that there's somebody who can bring those together and help shape them a little bit before they then come into the AI delivery pipeline.
Well, that's interesting. A couple of years ago, I threw out the idea of this role called an AI ambassador, where I saw this need to go out, right? And to work proactively and to like educate and help the business understand, hey, this is a lot of noise, but this is where you potentially could be focused, the right use cases, the right AI for the right use cases, for the right outcomes. Sounds like exactly what you're trying to get done.
Yes. Yeah, that is exactly what we're trying to do. Okay. Because I think when I think about AI and the future of AI, it's already getting to the point where it doesn't work to have one central team who's the people that know and understand it. It's going to proliferate across the whole of the organization. And we need to change the culture of the organization so that they're ready to embrace that. And so I think having that more federated model where you've got somebody within each of the different business functions who can then take what we're kind of learning and developing centrally and then help us to kind of get the value from that across the organization will be hopefully a big step forward. And I'm hoping that those AI champions will then foster kind of these little groups of mini AI champions that come together and discuss these things. So it then helps that cultural shift.
Well, it's not unlike governance as well, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what many of us are trying to do just broadly from a governance perspective. But there's something interesting here. I completely and totally agree. And if you're not helping the business along from an AI perspective, they're just going to go do it themselves. So either we can be invited to the party or we can't be invited to the party and they're just going to go do their own thing either way. We've seen this over and over and over again. Arguably, the democratization of IT was very much a function of that very ethos.
Yeah.
However, I'd love your opinion on this. I do see, so there's certainly a desire to federate, and I think that there's a necessity to federate when it comes to AI governance as well. But at the same time, from a technology and infrastructure perspective, I do see a tension there in towards more centralized approaches, right? So I do see a little bit of tension there from a technology perspective and a process and operating model perspective. Are you seeing the same?
Yes, definitely. And that we want to keep as central as possible for the time being. So actually, when it comes to the building, that sits set centrally. And there's still very much kind of approval processes. It's not like they're just free reign to go off and like license a load of tools and do things their own way. They don't have the authority to do that, or there's no budget that sits with them to go and do that. So it's more about fostering the ideas and helping to shape those ideas and then bring them into a central team for delivery. And then we have kind of our strategy around, you know, our general purpose tools that people can go and use, and we can train them up on those. We then have kind of our, okay, this thing, you know, we can build individual solutions for. We then have kind of our strategic layer where we're trying to build out AI capabilities that we can deploy into lots of different processes. And then there's that kind of the buy layer as well, where we say, right, well, actually the thing that you want, we don't want to build that because it's not central to our business strategy. It's not going to be worth the time or the effort to do so. And the tool that you've brought forward to us sounds good. It fulfills the criteria. So go for it if you can pay for it. Or we might say, when somebody thinks that they want to buy something, we might say, actually, you don't want to buy that because we've got this thing that we license over here that you could use instead. So it's kind of, it helps to shape the ideas and to get the business thinking about the value of AI, and helps to educate them about strategy. But actually, when it comes to delivery and decision-making, that still happens very much in the central hub.
Yeah, I'm seeing the same. I'm seeing a lot of teams trying to not only kind of integrate and federate the domains into everything you just said, right? Let's have a holistic review of, does this make sense? Does it not make sense? Does this tool integrate to our overall IT strategy? Is this the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do? I'm seeing that same thing happen within internal data science teams, where a lot of the CDOs that I'm talking to are trying to find ways so that data science teams stop kind of approaching everything from, you know, a Snowflake perspective. And I don't mean that like Snowflake, the infrastructure. I mean like net new, like everything needs to start from scratch. Everything is this net new initiative. I need to go directly to the source to get all the data, and I'm going to do everything from scratch. And I'm going to ignore the fact that we've got all these other data management tools over here, because I'm going to do Python for matching, and I'm going to do my own ETL, my own stuff. I'm seeing a lot of CDOs focus on that. Is that something that's kind of on your radar as well, as kind of having more of this unified, you know, from an infrastructure perspective, certainly, but also from a management and operating perspective, more of a holistic view across both the traditional BI worlds and data science and AI?
So I mean, I've got quite a small data science team at the moment. Okay. So we've the way that we've grown that is, you know, we've got our frameworks and our approaches, and so everybody follows those, and we haven't got anyone going rogue yet, which is handy. But I guess as that grows, and I'm assuming it will grow as there's more and more demand for what we're doing, then we need to be very careful about that, because I can see that becoming a challenge. And I understand that in larger organizations, that probably is definitely a challenge. But yeah, I think we've spent a lot of time over the last few months just trying to make sure that we have consistency in the way that we approach things, and kind of thinking about capabilities in a very modular fashion. So making sure that we don't just go and recreate lots of the same thing in different ways, but saying, right, we're going to create a modular capability, and then we're going to use that over and over again in problems that look similar and, you know, feel similar to the problem that we're trying to solve. Again, I think because we're very early on in the journey, it's easy to have that approach. And I'm sure that as demand increases and, you know, the whole process around AI and the way that we set ourselves up increases, it will be more challenging to implement that. But I think by starting with that approach and those principles in place, then hopefully that stands us in good stead to be successful.
Brilliant. Okay, so we've talked about this, I don't know if tension is the right word, but this need to find the balance between kind of pure domain centricity and federation and more centralization from maybe an infrastructure and technology perspective. We also hinted at this tension that is existing between, I want it all now, right? I want the shiny thing. I want some AI and traditional foundations, right? Which I know that you're working on, right? I've heard your talks with Juan and Tim, which is fantastic. I know you're working on governance, metadata management. I know you're certainly working on master data management. So how do you find the balance between those foundational things and I want some AI now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a, I think, a really interesting question, because I think it is a very big challenge. And I think we've been on a bit of a journey with it as well. So when I first came into this role and started Access Capital, I started thinking about, I kind of came in with a very traditional mindset about data governance, which is we need to have a data governance team that just gradually works through the churn of putting governance in place. And that's just important foundations that we just have to get cracking with. And, you know, maybe a year into the role, I kind of took a step back and reflected across the whole of my team. And I thought, right, well, most of it's going quite well, but governance is just failing. And it always seems to fail in kind of, you see it failing in lots of organizations. And I was thinking, I don't understand it. We've got somebody who's really bubbly, who can engage with the business, who can kind of do that and be a conduit to data governance, but it just wasn't working. So at that point, I had a bit of a rethink and thought, right, no, governance shouldn't be a separate kind of function that's sitting over here and working on just kind of building those foundations. Let's just embed it in delivery. Let's not bother doing governance for things unless there is unless it's contributing to something that we're building. And unless we have a incentive for the business to get involved in doing governance with us. So from that day forward, we removed the kind of standalone data governance tower and I embedded it within my delivery functions. And so now what happens is if somebody wants an AI thing and it requires data, they can't have it unless they help us to bring that data into governance. So if they're willing to help us to kind of assign the ownership of that data, to help us with the data, defining the data, ensuring master data has the necessary governance around and restoring it beautifully in prophecy and all of those pieces. So it then becomes part of the deal. And it also means that they understand why they're doing it rather than it just seeming like a kind of thankless task that they're given and they have no incentive to be involved in. So it's really, for me, it's about only doing the stuff that's actually going to be necessary and doing it in a way that makes it understandable and where people are incentivized to do it.
I think that's it. Right. I honestly think that's it. And I don't mean to be this like overly flowery and but when I've looked at governance, I mean, I've literally talked to thousands of CDOs about this topic over being an analyst for years and talking about what's working and not working. And I've been thinking about this literally for years. And the more that I think about it, the more I'm forced to the conclusion that governance in and of itself struggles because we've separated it from business operations, right? Because we've made it, like, ironically, right? But because we've made it this own thing that needs to be justified on its own, needs to be net positive ROI, needs to be all of these things optimally. And it just can't be, right? It can't be a P&L, right? Governance just cannot be a P&L. It's kind of like the electric grid, right? It needs some form of support because it suffers from the problem of the commons, right? Because we all kind of benefit from it, but we don't pay equally, right? And we don't benefit equally, but we all need it. So when we separated it, it created a thing. And what you're doing is to say, your exact words were to make it part of the delivery function, which is, it is like an ingredient to a cake. You want a cake. You want the cake. You've told me you wanted the cake. We believe there's ROI here. We want to build it. Okay, what's the governance needed in order to bake the cake? Sounds like that's the basically the approach. Sounds right?
That's exactly it. Yeah. So we have like a playbook for delivery and governance is just interwoven within that. So if somebody wants something, we get our business facing people, our data insights leads to work with them on what it is that they want to kind of co-create that with them. We do the architectural pictures because I like everything to be nicely designed. I think part of the reason that we've got into the pickle that we have is because people just built stuff without designing it. So we go through kind of the data architecture step. And within that, we're kind of saying, right, well, what are our requirements? What do we need in terms of data? And what are the governance activities that need to be carried out to ensure that data is robust and it's reliable and all of the good stuff that we want from our data? And so it's just a step within our delivery playbook.
I think that's key, because when I look at companies as well that are really good, like really, really good at governance, the governance is actually interwoven into their business operations, not just the delivery model of a data and analytics function, but like deeply woven into their business functions. Like I look at somebody like a Netflix or an Uber, governance isn't an afterthought. It's just kind of how they operate, but it's baked into literally how they operate. So you are taking a big step towards that. Obviously, it's part of your delivery, data and analytics, not necessarily business delivery, but absolutely love it. I think you're onto something. I think more CDOs need to be thinking about this from an operating model perspective. There's a lot of us that get kind of, I think we get concerned about taking that approach, because when we engage consultants, or maybe we look at, you know, blue books that are the best practices in our field that talk about, you know, these frameworks, which all say, hey, when you do governance well, you do all of these things. And that kind of stands in conflict to a certain degree with your approach. Your approach is very pragmatic. Let's do what's needed to support an outcome. But these framework-driven approaches are, okay, here's what you need in order to be considered enterprise-class governance. And I think that's where a big tension exists, particularly, and I'm not trying to be negative about consultants, but, you know, if you hire a consultant to help you with a governance problem, they're probably going to throw a framework at you, right? They're probably going to do a gap assessment, some sort of maturity assessment, and say, well, here's what good looks like, right? From a kind of a generic, here's what good looks like. You're taking a different approach, which is what is good for this outcome. Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. I think it's the right approach. And I think more and more of us need to be taking your exact approach. All right, let's kind of keep tying the thread here when it comes to AI. Where do you see things going? What does 2026 look like? Are you guys focused on kind of agentic stuff? Are you focused on chatbots? Are you focused on maybe thinking about customized smaller language models? What's the future look like?
So I mean, there are huge opportunities for us to enhance what we do with AI, and a lot of it. So I think we're not trying to change the world in 2026, but we want to build out some core capabilities that will enable us to enhance what we do. So some of the big areas that we're focused on, when I think about kind of the business that we write, there is a huge amount of unstructured data that currently is processed in an incredibly inefficient way. It drives processes, but it drives processes with lots and lots of people picking things out and, you know, doing things that are very, very manual in nature. So there is a massive raft of opportunity there. And that's where we're kind of furthest ahead on our AI journey, where we're looking to kind of extract it, data from unstructured documents and then use that to power processes. And then once we've kind of built that, then we can start to get more intelligent with that as well. So once we've got that unstructured data, then we can start to utilize it and analyze it and, you know, build our analytics layer on top of that. So that's very much our focus at the moment. I mean, alongside that, the other area where I think there is a lot of potential is in the kind of the chatbot space, whereby, again, we've got lots of unstructured data that we can open up to people to read in a much more efficient way, to kind of take data out of it in a much more efficient way. And that just equips people to be a bit more efficient in the way that they do things. And then once we've done that as well, then we can start to incentivize people, again, on the governance side of things, to start to help us with ensuring that we've got the necessary governance around our structured data estate so that those chatbots become a lot more powerful as well. So yeah, I'd say those are the two streams that we're thinking about at the moment. We have started to think through the opportunities around agentic AI, and I think that will be something that we definitely try to move forward with, but not immediately. That will probably come kind of deeper into 2026. I think it's a space that's moving really quickly as well, so I don't want us to necessarily jump in feet first to try and be first to the party, early to the party, when, you know, in a few months' time, we might get to a place where it'll be a lot easier for us to kind of build a lot of things ourselves.
Yeah, we don't all need to be early adopters, especially if we're in finance, insurance, you know, we don't all need to be early adopters. But what you said around unstructured data, I find really interesting, because I think more and more of us are starting to focus here. What does the how kind of look like with that? Is a knowledge graph a piece of this equation? I know you're leveraging data.world.now ServiceNow. you know, to help classify and catalog some of this data. What does the governance of that unstructured data, what do you think that starts to look like? How are you actually going to start doing that?
So again, great question. And it's something that we're kind of working through at the moment. But I mean, the first step is really just extracting kind of key terms from unstructured documents. So one of the big areas we're focused on is submissions. So somebody wants insurance, we get sent a submission, which has PDFs, it has a number of different file types on there. And we know that there are consistent data items we need to extract from that. So it's about extracting those data items and then pushing those into processes. What we also are very aware of is that that data is not just useful to push into processes, but also then to kind of create or to enhance and augment our data estate for us to then utilize further. And I think that's where we can utilize some of the tools that we have available to us, much like the knowledge graph underpinning data.world. So we can start to utilize that to populate our data catalog and the kind of ontology around our data estate as well. So that's something that we're working through. At the moment, we've again just focused on getting value quickly. And so that is let's just extract the items we need, push them into a process. And then alongside that, we've got that kind of thought process around, okay, and how do we then use this to enrich our data to then be able to do more and leverage it further?
So it sounds a little bit like you're focused on potentially kind of, is it new policy onboarding, policy processing or evaluation, doing some of this sort of, because one of the challenges here, I think, around unstructured data for many of us is that there's so much of it, right? Yes. And where would we even begin to start to focus to get, you know, because one of the things I'm recommending is, hey, we need to start governing unstructured data. It's what the LLMs want. It is literally the, you know, the nutritional source for these language models. What I think I'm hearing you say is, hey, let's focus on optimizing this business process. And we can look specifically at this one business process, start plucking key terms out of PDFs, start understanding what's sitting out in those PDFs with the goal of optimizing that process. Am I getting that about right?
That's it. That's been the kind of the narrow initial focus for us, which is let's get some value quickly. So let's just extract the key terms and let's optimize the process.
Okay, brilliant. So again, a repeating theme here, my friends, if you're listening to this, which is let's focus on a goal, right, that we know is important because we're talking to the business. We have ambassadors that are out there talking every day with the business. We're understanding potential ROI. We are limiting our scope to things that we know will deliver value, and we're working backwards from there. Absolutely, positively love it. These are things I've been talking about for years, and I think, Rebecca, more CDOs should be doing. This has been a wonderful conversation on a Friday afternoon, a great way, or Friday afternoon for you, morning for me, a great way to end a week. Really want to thank you for the conversation. Also want to thank you for participating in Prophecy's Data Hero Summit yesterday. I think it was wonderful. Thank you so much. Any last words that you want to add? Things that we didn't kind of touch on about maybe the future, things that you're super proud of. I mean, what I'm hearing, I've just loved in this conversation. I think you're doing a lot of things right.
Thank you. No, I mean, all I would say is that we're really just learning as we go. So I think it's really important to try things, see whether they work. And if they don't, then be willing to pivot. And so I definitely don't think that we've got it all right yet. But I think being nimble and, you know, spending lots of time reflecting and looking back and then working out a way to go next has helped us to kind of keep a bit of momentum and to have more successes than if we kind of stay down one track. So I think that's an important part of what we're trying to do here.
Critical. To paraphrase you, what you just said is you're embracing a growth mindset, right? Which is you're trying, you're throwing a lot of pieces of spaghetti to the fridge. You're talking closely with customers. You're setting and managing expectations. You're not afraid to fail. And you're learning from everything you do, doing retrospectives. We need to do more of that, I would argue, more retrospectives. What worked, what didn't work? You know, we often in software, we call them postmortems. I'm not crazy about that word. Yeah, exactly. But retrospective, right? Like what's working, what's not working. That is a growth mindset. That is a trait of the organizations that I've talked to over the years that tend to be far more successful than companies that don't embrace a growth mindset. So again, love what I'm hearing. to all of your listeners, if you've made it this far, hey, go ahead and hit like, maybe subscribe. It would be great if you joined our growing community of CDOs and people that want to be CDOs here on CDO Matters. I send out a monthly newsletter every third Friday of every month. We do a live event on LinkedIn that you can do. It's completely and totally free. All this content is free. All I ask is maybe a like. Hey, engage with me on LinkedIn. If we're not connected on LinkedIn, please connect with me on LinkedIn. Rebecca, thank you again so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. That will do it for this episode of the CDO Matters podcast. Tune into another episode sometime very soon. Thanks and bye for now.